ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Text Number 7. So I'll read from the word for word. Please repeat. Yaha tu Indriyani manasa niyamya arabhate arjuna karma indriyai karma yogam asaktaha saha vishishyate yastvindriyani manasa niyam yara bhaterjuna karmendriyai karma yogam asakta sa vishishyate yastvindriyani manasa Niyam yara bhatarjuna karmendriyai kama yogam asakta sa vishishyate yastvindriyani manasa niyam yara bhatarjuna karmendriyai kama yogam Asakta sa vishishyate. Yastvindriyani manasa. Niyam yar bhaterjuna. Karmendriyai karma yogam. Asakta sa vishishyate. Please repeat, Yaha, one who, two, but, Indriyani, the senses, Manasa, by the mind, Niyamya, regulating, Arabhate, begins, Arjun, O Arjuna, Karma Indriyai, by the active sense organs, karma yogam, devotion, asaktaha, without attachment, saha, he, vishishyate, is by far the better. Translation. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind, and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness, without attachment, he is by far superior. Purport. Instead of becoming a pseudo-transcendentalist for the sake of wanton living and sense enjoyment, it is far better to remain in one's own business and execute the purpose of life, which is to get free from material bondage and enter into the kingdom of God. The prime svartagati, or goal of self-interest, is to reach Vishnu. The whole institution of Varna and Ashram is designed to help us reach this goal of life. A householder can also reach this destination by regulated service in Krishna consciousness. For self-realization, one can live a controlled life, as prescribed in the Shastras, and continuing carrying out his business without attachment, and in that way make progress. A sincere person who follows this method is far better situated than the false pretender who adopts show-bottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. A sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living.
Sri Chaitanya Manobhistang Stapitang Yena Bhutale Swayang Rupa Kadamayang Dadati Swapanantikang Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvetang Savadutang Prichana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhana Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sanubhyayvacha Patitanang Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Niyatang let's text 8 Yastvi drindiyani manasa niyamya rabatarjuna karmendriyai karma yogam asakta sa vishishyate. Okay, so little recap. Yesterday we read the verse. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So we have entered the third chapter. It's basically the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Second chapter is a summary study. So I will just recap a little for you and for myself. I'll just start from the beginning. Arjuna is a little confused. I mean, although it's called a summary, he's picking the discussion up from the second chapter. I won't go into that now because I'm also not so scholarly. And it's going to take a lot of time also. He says, why do you want me engaged in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? So he's asking, well, Prabhupada explains it in the purport, actually. He explains that this buddhi, intelligence or buddhi yoga, Arjuna thinks it's doing nothing. And fruit of work means karma or working in Krishna consciousness. That Krishna says that is not so good. Or that is, buddhi yoga is better. So then he says, my intelligence is bewildered by your equifocal instructions. And then Krishna says, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation and others by devotional service. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, actually Karma Yoga and Buddhi Yoga, it's actually the same. But karma is different. Karma means to do good works. And Karma Yoga means to work for Krishna, and Buddhi Yoga means is to, well, I can tell you exactly what Buddhi Yoga means because Prabhupada explains it. He says, where is that? I think it's in text 4, no? Now, by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. So by not working, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. So you just stop working, that doesn't work, and if you just become like completely renounced, that also doesn't work. Let me see. I'm just trying to find this this definition of Buddhi Yoga, I think it's in the text number 2, no? Anyway, I can't find it now. I'll come back to that. Uh, Ah, here it is. Yeah, Buddha Yoga. Krishna consciousness. One can be. Oh no, this is something else. Yeah, here it is. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So Buddha Yoga and Karma Yoga, Prabhupada here explains that they're basically the same. And the Sankhya Yoga is the indirect process. That is, but it's also the same actually. But Prabhupada says the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. Because Sankhya Yoga basically, I don't know exactly what it means, like, because, you know, Devahuti was doing it, you know, the mother of Kapila Dev, and she became like water. Or milk, no, water. She meditated, and this Sankhya philosophy is about all the different elements of the universe. So she started to realize that. She started to realize that her body is made of the elements of the universe. And she was so realized that she gradually started to, the elements started to disintegrate, and her body turned into water. It's like, yeah, very high level. Can't really expect anybody to do that in the. So it's kind of a very mystical process. This Sankhya Yoga. It's not just talking. You know, it's an actual meditation. But the process, the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. And also, we explained that. Day before yesterday, that this bhakti yoga, it doesn't matter what you do, Prabhupada says, it's all good. So this is a very important thing because we're also talking about karma, and karma means varnashram, you know, means you act inside your duty, you know. So like you're grihastha, I'm brahmachari, but the main thing is that we serve Krishna. And serving Krishna means ultimately that you do it in your constitutional position. Jivaras Swarup Hoy, Krishna Nityadas. The eternal Swarup of the soul is servant of Krishna. So that is, we already have that. We just have to realize it. But if we serve, then basically we've realized it. So, and especially if we follow the system, Parampara system, the spiritual master orders something, then that is perfection. Prabhupada says the secret of the success is to follow the order of the spiritual master. So it doesn't matter if you're a grihastha or brahmachari, if the spiritual master asks you something, like for instance, you know, print books, then it doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari or a grihastha. Like a brahmachari, he shouldn't, because printing books is like a business. But, you know, this is transcendental. This is like a gopi karma, gopi work. The gopis, they are trying to increase the enjoyment of Lord Krishna. So by distributing books, we're increasing the enjoyment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's a transcendental activity. And everything here in this temple is basically supporting that order. So it doesn't really matter so much what you do. Of course, we are, unfortunately, generally a little conditioned, so then it's recommended that you do what you like to do. And Prabhupada would ask devotees. I mean, sometimes we overanalyze what Varnashram Dharma means, or Varnashram. Prabhupada just said, what would you like to do for Krishna? That's it. That's Varnashram. Like for me, you know, like I like to give class. It comes natural, it's not very difficult for me. But for instance, cooking, I also like cooking, but it's a little bit more difficult for me. Like for Rishabh, I shouldn't say names, but I think in this way I can mention name because he's really good. And he, you know, he cooks. And it's nothing for him. I used to cook in Amsterdam. I was finished. I couldn't do anything anymore after the lunch. But for him it's nothing. He just works in Vanipedia after lunch. For him it's easy. So, and friend, you have this Gopinath. Oh, it's another name. Anyway, too many names. But it was another devotee. And he was a little bit struggling. He was washing the pots and wasn't going so super well with his spiritual life. And I said, you just do something that you like. And he liked
chanting, you know, and playing kartals. So he was really getting into that. And then he got this whole spiritual life turned around. Now he's initiated. So you just try to do what you like to do, what it comes natural. Like, yeah, for instance, Mozart, he liked making music. So, you know, he was already making music when he was 4. So it's from previous lives already, you know. So, yeah, we just find something that we like to do, and then we do that. But ultimately, we do what we're ordered to do. That, because, you know, it's not that we just do what we like, we do what Krishna likes. But, you know, it can go hand in hand. It depends a little bit. But this is how Prabhupada did it. Well, Prabhupada, you know, we accept him as a pure devotee, as the acharya, who gives the example. So this is how he did it. People would walk in, what would you like to do? I would like to paint. Oh, you. And he created the service. We're going to get you into painting. And like that, you know. He saw other big men, they came, and he engaged them in management. Yeah. I don't know, that's... It's still, I mean, I have to admit, it's still a little bit difficult for me to understand, but if you look at how Prabhupada did it, it seems that it's not difficult at all. It's just that we make it difficult, you know? Including me, you know? Anyway. So, that was yesterday. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So I was making the point yesterday that this is, as far as I'm concerned, mainly talking about yogis who refuse to work in Krishna consciousness, make a show of meditation. Today, you could make that same case, although at the end, Prabhupada quotes this, not really a quote, but I know it comes from Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj. He said that it's better to be a sincere sweeper in the street than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. And I have to look it up, but I think he sometimes, Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj, he would quote this concerning some of his disciples. I think it's like that. But I would still advise the devotees that, you know, I mean, he's Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj, he can do anything he wants. I advise still the devotees to be very careful in just, Prabhupada used to say, it was on the memories tapes, somebody said it, I forgot who it was. But Prabhupada said that this knowledge is like a knife. And you can cut with it. He said, please do not do that. Don't cut with it. So you can take this knowledge, you can take this verse, you know. If a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So sometimes people make the case, it's better to be an honest householder than some puffed up pretending brahmachari. Of course I'm a brahmachari, so I'm going to defend my case. But, you know, another thing that comes to mind, I mean, I don't want to get a whole Grihastha brahmachari thing going, because I'm really not so much into it. I many of my friends are Grihasthas. I think it's a great ashram. I think I can somehow or other tolerate it, you know, and I can avoid it. Let's see. Up till now, it's not so difficult for me. Although, you know, I don't want to get too personal, but I ran into some problems, but was not, you know, I just underestimated a few things. Anyway, the point is that we got a 50% divorce rate, I think, if it's not more. So it's not that Grihastha Ashram is like the solution to all our problems. You know, unfortunately, it's not. I mean, if there was a 90% success rate, then maybe, I don't think still you wouldn't have a case, but then maybe you could have a case, you know, be happy and be... But many of these Grihastha marriages, they end in a total disaster. Well, maybe not total disaster, but it's... Some of these get pretty nasty, you know. So, you know, to advise people, I mean, most people do need to get married, it's a fact. But to just start to advise everybody, just get married... It's not so advisable. I said it yesterday also, you need to be qualified also to enter that Grihastha ashram. I don't want to get too personal, but sometimes I feel, you know, some persons, because some people say, he needs to get married, and I'm thinking, well, to whom? You know, I don't want him to get married with some nice devotee. I don't think he's qualified. You know? So, you know, we have to really... make sure that people who want to get married are qualified. That they, for instance, like the Hindus, they got it down. First thing the parents look at, how you're going to provide for my girl, how you're going to make money. We never think of these things. And then you got another thing in ISKCON. Many devotees, they want to be a sadhu. I mean, I don't want to get too personal. I don't want to criticize you or anything. I think you're doing fine. But you can't just, you know, go and chant all your rounds and leave the wife and the kid alone. You know, you can't do that. Your sadhu life is kind of over a little bit. I mean, you have to find the balance ultimately. You have to find a balance, but your child comes first, you know, and it's tough. It's tough because you want to be a devotee. Your whole life you've been a devotee, you do sadhana bhakti, and then suddenly you have to get a job and a house and so many money, so many pressure, and then, it's difficult to follow spiritual life. But some people, they just ignore it. They say, no, I have to follow my sadhana, morning and evening program, Brahman says it. You know that, and then the marriage just goes down the drain. So you have to find a balance. If you do the other thing, that's also not good. let me just watch television, and you know it's too much in the temple, and so you know you have to find the kind of the balance. That's why this deity worship, that is very good. You know, you do sometimes some deities, very powerful, and it's very much recommended actually for Grihasthas, for everybody, but especially for Grihasthas. So, you know, that is very very nice. So I think we have to find the balance and not, you know, bash each other over the head. Because I know people do it with these verses. I don't want to call any names. But they use these two verses to tell people you should become married. But, we have to be very careful with that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the longer you stay brahmachari, the better it is. Like, I was in Scotland. I don't want to get in too many details. But, you know, something happened there, like a spiritual authority, he left. And then after that, everybody got married. And I don't think it's so bad, but one of the things people told me, and it stuck to my mind, I said, I feel really ready now to get married. Because another thing, I mean, it's not, I still don't advise it so much to get married in an old age. But, you know, who knows, maybe I will also do it. But the way he explained it and the way I understood it, that like he was like a brahmachari for 15-20 years. So that is the natural age. You go from 5 to 25 brahmachari training and then you get married. And then these brahmacharis from the Vedic culture, they were qualified. Their fathers were brahmanas, they were pure, they were not eating meat. We come from a very demoniac background, at least if I speak for myself, and I know this other person, I think also, you know. And so he felt that he was really more calm, more mature to enter that ashram. So that is another consideration that on the one hand, you know, we should look, every case is different. Because generally Prabhupada says you should marry before 25, at least before 30. Because after 30, you're a little bit conditioned, like, you want to have things your way, and then it says it's not so pleasurable. Because you have to be flexible as a grihastha when there's children and this. And when you're young, you can just push through that, you know. When you're a little older, it gets a little cumbersome. So, but at the same time, if you're too young, or better said, immature, yeah, then it's also not good. Like in the Shastra says, if you cannot deliver your children from birth, death, old age, and disease, then don't get married. So yeah, there needs to be some maturity there, some balance, to enter that ashram. At the same time, if you're too old, it's also not so good. So we have to find a balance. I think also the movement is kind of young. And then, you know, these sannyasis, they took sannyas when they were 25. Maharaj gave a whole lecture on it, whole seminar. And then suddenly now they hit like a midlife crisis and they want to a little bit enjoy and... not so much enjoy, I think. What I sometimes hear is they lack some kind of love, some kind of like kindness, you know, and then they want it. I personally think yesterday I gave a very nice lecture that we have to be nice to the devotees. At the same time, now is another day. I also think it's just Maya. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, you know. Maya is Maya, but sometimes a little Maya is better than a whole lot of Maya. So sometimes, you know, just, you know, okay, you're sannyasi and okay, you know, get married and just be fixed. Don't give up all your service. Don't go all the way down, you know. So there we have to find the balance also. So, you know, on the one hand, it's good to marry young if you're qualified. And on the other hand, it's also good to wait a little bit. So my personal policy is I always tell people, because I'm a brahmachari, to wait. You know, see if you can do it. You know, and become more calm. Don't just, oh, like that, and then get married. It should not be too passionate. You should just look at your desires, what you want. This is also generally advice. You have a list. And then your future wife has a list, and you see if it matches. There's other things that need to be matched: astrology charts, like we talked about the money. You know how we're going to get the money. You be cool-headed about it. Anyway, so I think I just want to give a little balanced presentation. That I don't want to get a whole brahmachari grihastha thing going. At the same time, I think it's nice we have grihasthas, and it's all, you know, like I remember a lecture of Lokanath Maharaj many years ago, actually, in Paris. He said in the beginning of the movement we had like an orange ocean and a few white spots, and now we have like a white ocean and a few orange or saffron spots. So I think it's time now to revive the Brahmachari Ashram. Recently, 2 years ago, we had the Brahmachari Convention for the second time. Last year, 2011, it got cancelled because there were too many marriages in the manor. You know, they have to, it's like a, kind of like a business, and it's a lot of money. And it's packed, it's scheduled, and they couldn't find a hole in the schedule, so it got cancelled. So yeah, anyway, we're struggling as brahmacharis, but I think we can a little bit, and it's also cheaper, eh? Like if you have brahmacharis, they work for free. So also managers, economically it's just better to have brahmacharis. You know, you should consider that also. I think we can, yeah, revive that a little bit. Okay, let me just get into the purport a little bit. Instead of becoming a pseudo-transcendentalist for the sake of wanton living and sense enjoyment, it is far better to remain in one's own business and execute the purpose of life, which is to get free from material bondage and enter into the kingdom of God. Yeah, again, I mean, you can make the case that it's talking about a devotee, but let's just first look at it. Like, because in the previous purport, Prabhupada clearly describes a yogi. So let's just look at it like that first. Instead of becoming a pseudo-transcendentalist for the sake of wanton living and sense enjoyment. So generally that's a yogi. You know, he just wants a living and he wants to enjoy senses. Like I explained yesterday, I was a yoga teacher. That's basically what I was doing. It was just a way to make money and I was enjoying my senses. I mean, it's mixed. I was trying to tell people you're not the body, and I was helping them. I was helping their physique, but that's basically what it came down to. I was a pseudo-transcendentalist. But, and now I give the other side, sometimes Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that if you just use the deity for making money, then it's a little bit similar. So we have to be careful, you know. That's why Radha is so powerful, because we have this this tour program, but we have to also be careful that it doesn't just become like, you know, let's open the curtains and get some money. So we have to find the balance there, you know. We have to be careful. But and I really don't like to talk like that, because it's mainly coming from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and he was so pure and so staunch, and he can say these things. I don't feel so qualified to speak like that. But at the same time, we do have to follow in his footsteps. So I just want to at least mention it, because I want to give a balanced presentation. You know, it's not just that we go from one step to the other, like Rasamandali would raise questions. So I'm more or less raising questions, and we can just think about it and see how we deal with it, how we put it in practice. It is far better to remain in one's own business. Yeah, so not make a business out of spiritual life, specifically, you know, yoga classes, you know, just do it for, I mean, if you do it for preaching, it's another thing, but if you're not connected with Krishna, then it's for your own business, you see. And so that you should just remain, then it's just for business, but Prabhupada says you should remain in one's own business. You should just stick to your own spiritual life, not get too much involved with others, and execute the purpose of life, which is to get free from material bondage and enter in the kingdom of God. So we just discussed it also. If you don't get married, if you can't free your children from birth and death. So you can preach, but Prabhupada says if you're not qualified, then what you're going to preach? So it's a balance. It's not that you cannot wait till you're 100, now I'm qualified, now I'm going to preach. But at the same time, you know, you have to study a little bit, you have to follow, you have to do some sadhana. Otherwise, you know, what your preaching is going to be. So again, you have to find a balance in that also. But I think the main focus is, and Parthasarathi very nicely has this mood, the main focus is that you are concerned with your own spiritual life. And the preaching is just adding. It's just like a sadhana. You go out and you just tell people about Krishna. It's part of your spiritual life. Instead of, you know, I am enlightened and now I'm going to tell this karmi, you know, that he has to surrender to Krishna. I mean, that's not really the mood. It's more like, you know, let me try and share Krishna with other persons, kind of. Or, you know, something like that. The whole institution of Varnan Ashram, the prime Svartagati, or goal of self-interest, is to reach Vishnu. So Artha means money or valuable, or and Gati means goal, and Sva means, like, I think it means something like mind. Sva Artha Gati, self-interest, Prabhupada translated, the goal of self-interest. Artha is translated here as interest. This is interesting translation because money and interest, it's interesting how these words are all connected. The whole institution of Varnan Ashram is designed to help us reach this goal of life. Yeah, so here Prabhupada explains that it's a gradual process. A householder can also reach his destination by regulated service in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so I think personally the word also is very important here. Because generally the householder, it's more difficult. It's just a fact. Because many times people have this philosophy that it, you know, it's better to be an honest household. That is not what this purport is saying as far as I am concerned. You know, I mean, it gets more complicated when you're a householder. Like I'm brahmachari, it's easy. Of course, I have to give up sex, but it's that is difficult. But if you can do that, then it's easy. I have no worries. I only have to worry about Vishnumurti and that's it. I mean, you do have to surrender. You either surrender to your wife, your family, and you still have an authority, or you have a job. Like I also worked a job, then you have to surrender to your boss there. So surrender, you must, you know. So I'm also surrendering, or trying to surrender. So, you know, that is there. But it's more easy. Because, if you work a job, then you have to travel and this and that, and pay taxes and so many things. It gets complicated. But Prabhupada says, a householder can also reach this destination by regulated service in Krishna consciousness. So here Prabhupada also says, you have to be regulated, you have to practice. You can't just expect to just, you know, work, money, and then be Krishna conscious. It doesn't work like that. You have to stay in the association of devotees, come at least to the Sunday feast, and have some regulated service, you know, like, for instance, deity worship. For self-realization, one can live a controlled life as prescribed in the Shastras and continue carrying out his business without attachment, and in that way make progress. And so here Prabhupada, I think, is describing the Grihastha ashram. It's a controlled ashram. It's very much controlled. You only have one wife, like that. Not going around from one wife to the next. And this is very difficult, something that I'm not so much able to do. Continue carrying out his business without attachment. That's very difficult. A sincere person who follows this method is far better situated than the false pretender who adopts showbottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. Yeah, so again, you know, you could make a case that this is talking about false renunciants, and yeah, I will not deny it. But continuing on the previous purport, I think the first reading should be, you know, that is some yogi, you know, some like some Mayavadi or something. A sincere person, so because these Mayavadis, they can be pretty austere, you see, and they look really spiritual. And they have hundreds and thousands of followers, and you have many of them in India. And when Prabhupada wrote this Bhagavad Gita, there were hundreds of them also in the West, and people were paying big money, you know. And then you had Prabhupada with his Grihasthas. They opened up London. We should thank them eternally, because we would not be here without, you know, all these wonderful devotees, Malati, Gurudas, Mukunda Goswami, Janavi, Shamasundar, and Yamuna Devi. They opened up London, you know. They preached George Harrison. It's a miracle. And then from there they opened up Amsterdam, and then I think Germany, and then of course from Amsterdam it went also to much later went to Belgium. And Dhananjaya was sent to Italy. He opened up Italy. So, yeah, it was all done by Grihasthas. But like I said, you know, I mean, I don't want to get a whole Gaudiya Mata Iskon thing. It's already bad enough as it is. But it does come to mind, because Prabhupada would also sometimes say this. Maybe it's not so good to say it in the class, but, you know, I already let the genie out of the bottle. But sometimes I feel that also that there's a little bit the sentiment here, that Prabhupada was saying, my Grihasthas are better, and he would say like that, than all these big sannyasis from the Gaudiya Mat, because they also came to London, and they even got a salary. Bhaktisiddhanta was paying them. Prabhupada didn't pay them nothing. He said, just go trust in Krishna. They had a little bit money. I think they had like £500, that was it. For six people, £500. It's nothing. Yeah, you have to rent a house. And they had a child. Shamasundar and Malati had a child. I mean, you cannot imagine how austere that is, you know. So that does come to mind when I read this, you know. Because, but at the same time, I think we have to be careful, you know. I think the first reading should be these big so-called yogis, you know. Showbottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. Because Krishna consciousness is so auspicious, you know. It's not really cheating, you know. You give somebody Krishna, it's not really cheating. But at the same time, we have to be qualified, you know. We have to qualify ourselves. We can't just expect everything automatically. Rasamandali said this word, automatic. We have to look at this word. You know, if we are... This is our whole philosophy, basically. If we are nonsense, then we are nonsense. And if we are pure, then we are pure. This is our philosophy. It doesn't matter where you are, who you are, if you're woman, child, man, brahmachari, dhoti, no dhoti. If you're pure, you're pure. If you're a rascal, you're a rascal. So if we do all the activities of a rascal, like in America they say, if it talks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. It's not difficult to understand this. So we should be careful, you know. We should try to act achar as a devotee, you know. And it's a little bit, sometimes people say, it's artificial. Yeah, it's called sadhana bhakti. You practice in the beginning and it is artificial, but then you get attached to it. It's a matter of time. Again, Jivara Svarup Hoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. Prabhupada says, look at these, my disciples. It's not normal. It's because the Krishna consciousness is the natural situation of the soul. And that is why they so fast they take up this Krishna consciousness, because it's natural. So if we practice, then we revive that natural tendency. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Habakabu Noi, something like that. And then Sudha Chit, something like that. You practice, and then the consciousness becomes Sudha, becomes purified. A sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. Yes, so how can that be a devotee? You know, the charlatan meditator. That's like Mayavadi, you know. He's making a show. And he's just doing it to make money, generally. You know, it's a little bit mixed. But the bottom line is, he's just doing it to make a living. So then better, Bhaktisiddhanta says, better be a street sweeper. Anyway, I hope, it was a little bit heavy lecture, a little bit controversial. I hope I still got it balanced. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Right. Yeah, but I understand. But the idea is that your if your family is Krishna conscious, then generally if you work, you think of them. So that means that you're Krishna conscious. And then you can extend it, you know, you can try to think of Krishna. And then you can also give something of that money to the temple. And then you will even think more of Krishna. You can think of Gopinath. I'm working for Gopinath. But you can just think about your family, because they're devotees. And then it's automatically Krishna conscious. But, like I said, there have to be devotees. So some activity must be there, some spiritual activity must be there. Yeah. No, that's all right. But you just no. I understand. But you just do it the best way you can. And because you're a devotee, and you just do it the best way you can, and that is the meditation. Like some devotees, they have the service of the garbage. But they have to understand this is Krishna garbage. So it's about the consciousness. You try to do as best as possible. So when you work, you try to do as best as possible. This is a preaching. So that people know, you always hire a devotee because they're honest, they come on time, they're clean, they're polite, like that. So then it's a preaching. I also had a job, and I tried to be nice, you know. I didn't preach. I mean, sometimes people would ask, but I never preached. I just tried to be nice, tried to be on time. Didn't always work, but like that. And it's long-term preaching. And it's good. If devotees have a job, then people start to see that we're normal people. So it's like that as a preaching. So you can meditate on Prabhupada, and again, you meditate on your family. You do it for them, you know. But make sure that they're Krishna conscious. So you have to find the balance. And I have to stop here. Sorry. Hope that's right. Okay. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Sorry.